Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Ken Oishi, 23 years of career experience, a driver on Ladder 7 for Honolulu Fire Department in Hawaii. When I asked Ken to come on and talk, he was hesitant at first, but so far since starting this podcast, I haven't been wrong with the guests I've been fortunate to talk to. Ken is a firm believer in putting in the work over running that mouth. Actions always win, and Ken continues to put in the work within the fire service when it comes to humility, training, and physical fitness. My favorite quote from Ken is, "It's better to stay in shape than to get in shape." With that, I present Mr. Ken Oishi.
My name is Ken Oishi. I've been a firefighter for 23 years. I got into the fire service. I always wanted to be a firefighter. I think that something happened early on. One of my classmates in kindergarten, actually, her dad was a chief. I lived in California for about 10 years. She brought her dad in for like kind of like a show and tell, like to meet. And this man was always very nice to me whenever he saw me. He knew me by name. Maybe because I was only like me and my brother were the only Asian kids in the school, but maybe that's why he remembered me. But that'll kind of come back later in this part of the story, I guess. So I remember going to his station and he doing the visitations and stuff. But later on in life, maybe when I was about intermediate school, right before I moved back to Hawaii, my friend was kind of fooling around and he had a smoke bomb from his house to my house on top of the roof, and my house caught on fire. So we ran down, me and my mom were home at the time. We both got out safe, but then me and my friend jumped on top of the fence, jumped on the roof with a garden hose and tried to put the fire out. And that dad or that girl's father actually came to my house. So I kind of came full circle with that. Like ever then, since then, it's kind of been like it's something that I've wanted to do. Just being able to see what they did. And there's been some other things. When I was in high school, I think I kind of lost my way for a little bit, you know. Well, one thing, when I tried to first apply for my department that I'm in now, there was a medical requirement where your eyesight had to be 20/20 uncorrected. And there was like, my vision wasn't so bad, but it wasn't good enough to pass. So I kind of did some odd things, mostly cooking during the time. And then I started cooking at this, probably one of the most renowned restaurants, you know, in Honolulu. And they brought in a guy to teach CPR, and he was a firefighter. And I kind of thought like, why am I doing this? I kind of knew that being a cook or becoming a chef, I'm going to be home, not going to be home a lot with my family, and my family is everything to me, you know? So I just changed gears. Like 2 days later, I quit. I started enrolling in fire science and just started applying everywhere. I applied to all the islands. I applied to state crash here. I applied to Fed. And I was lucky enough to get hired at the first department that I applied to. The rest is history after that.
Okay. All right. So were you able to find a loophole with the 2020 thing, or did they just kind of put that to the side a little bit?
I think they actually got rid of it, but I actually had gotten LASIK about maybe, I don't know, 5 years after that. And then so it wouldn't have been a problem. But that was a thing, like, you know, they always had like vision kits, like I noticed in, you know, SCBAs, but I don't know why that was a stipulation in their employment at the time. But yeah, that was a thing.
So
it's all good now.
You were in California and then you went back to Hawaii. What made the transition to come to the States and then to kind of go back to Hawaii?
My dad wasn't in the military, but he worked for like, I guess, kind of a military contract in like communications. So I guess to get ahead, he was the single breadwinner in our household. So we moved up to Sacramento, California when I was about five. And I came back when I was a sophomore. He told my mom that this may be the last time that we'll be able to come back. So we made that move. Yeah.
Okay. So you've pretty much since you were little, you kind of alluded to you've maybe had that secret notion, hey, I want to be a firefighter. And you got back, quit your job, did everything you had to get certified, and you got on your current department. So with that being said, what was your first well, did you have to do some sort of recruit class rookie school before you got assigned?
We went through, it's not as long as it is now. I think now it's like 6 months or 7 months or something like that, but it was only like 4 months. But I don't know, I think it was a little bit better than how it is. Like, it was just strictly like firefighting, medical, driver training. It's not as long. They have to fulfill so many more hoops now that we're an accredited organization. So I had to go through that. But I think it was one of the best times of my life. I knew I wanted to be a firefighter, but that kind of really, I knew that this is a thing. Big thing for me. Like, I was one of those kids that always kind of stood in the back of class and not really like, but knowing this is what I wanted to do, like I sat in the front of class. I wanted to be like first one to volunteer for skills. It was like, I'm not going to shy away from this because I know this is what I was meant to do. This is my calling. And it was just like, I'm not going to, be that guy in the back of class anymore. I'm going to put myself out there.
Okay. So what was it like upon completion and getting your first assignment? Like at walking into whatever firehouse you were assigned to, what was that like for you?
Kind of surreal, I guess. What had happened was one of my RTOs, he kind of pulled me to the station because he knew that I cooked professionally before. So I think he wanted me to help to like bring some good food to the station. But it was a three company house at the time. There was rescue, a quint, and an engine. I was on the engine. It was rather slow. I would want it to go to someplace really busy. I knew from the start of my career that I wanted to be, the quality and quantity of calls that I was going to go to was going to kind of shape my career. It was a pretty slow house, I would have to say. But yeah, I mean, it was surreal. I mean, this is what I wanted, and yeah, I just loved it from day one. It was this, this I knew I this is what I wanted to do. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now you are my first ever guest from Hawaii. So I want to say number one, thank you for accepting this invite. And I'm actually looking forward to asking you so many questions that I wanted to myself. The first one being, can you talk about the size of your department? Roughly the amount of people you have, the type of trucks that you have, things like that.
Our department is the largest one in the state. We have about, I'd say, around 1,100 employees. So rather big. A lot of people think that, being from Hawaii, it's going to be, really small, and we live in grass huts, and we swim around with sharks and stuff. But no, we protect about a million people, residents and visitors that come to Hawaii. We have 43 stations, three watches. What else? We have two rescue, two hazmats, three helicopters. What else? We have various trucks from like ladders. We have TDAs, quints, and towers. And our apparatus vary from like Pierce and KME mostly now. Our C-graders are kind of getting old and kind of are not our first line apparatus anymore. But yeah, mostly Pierce and KME.
Okay. You said 43 firehouses.
42 firearms, yeah.
Where's the firehouse? Okay. What's your minimum staffing on each apparatus?
So we're budgeted, so there's five on every truck. So a captain, a driver, and three firefighters. Our minimum staffing would be a captain and two firefighters. So like one person driving and another, like a backstep guy. So that would be our minimum. Our staffing has been pretty good lately. I'd say probably from the last, I don't know, 7 years at least. They've been they figure out ways to figure out overtime where guys can hold over, hold under, or just bring in guys off shift. Like when I came on, we ran minimum for at least the first 10 years. I can count on my hand probably the amount that we ever ran like with a full crew. It was something that I just got used to though. I don't like to send my guys out to go relieve someplace else. You know, I rather have my guys in house because I know I can trust those guys. But yeah, our minimum would be three, and then our if we have everybody would be five.
Okay.
Yeah, and that would be on all trucks. Rescue and hazmat, they have to run five. That's just something that our department has, just because if they have a big incident or something, that they have the manpower to do so. But the other trucks, yeah, we can run down to three.
Okay. And by rescue, do you mean like an actual heavy rescue or an ambulance?
Heavy rescue. Ambulance for us, they are part of the city, but they're not fire. They kind of go under the EMS thing. I tried to absorb them a couple of times. It didn't work out because their head guys didn't want to do it at the time. So we co-respond with them. So we'll beat them to just about every call, I would say, just because we have 43 stations and there's maybe about 17 ambulances across the island. So most times we'll beat them. But we don't push drugs and we don't transport. So yeah. And then
Okay.
I think minimum. When I came in, we were a first responder. I think I would say a large part of us are EMTBs now, but because it wasn't our, I don't know if our contract or whatever, not everyone is EMTB yet, but it's probably getting pretty close that we are pretty much 100% there. There's not too many more classes that have to go before we retire now, be 100%.
Okay. And as far as fire ground functions, are engines and trucks do truck work, or if a quint or a truck gets there first, would they be assigned an engine company task?
So maybe this would have been something that I would have talked about, let's say I would have talked about. I think our ladders early on, in my career, we didn't really do truck work. It's something that one of my guys that was stationed with me, he promoted and he became a training captain. He asked me at the time, like, he wants to push truck. And I was like, yeah, I'm your guy, I'll do whatever. And so I started going and traveling and training, going to all these conferences to learn truck specific things. But we never really did that before. Guys would come off the ladder and try to steal hose because they really didn't know what to do. They didn't ventilation wise, they pulled up a fan. They didn't know how to do vertical vent or take windows or we weren't really good at forcing doors at the time. Our department is a lot better now. I'd say about 10 years, training has gotten really pushed here. But even I think the truck culture still is not something that's prevalent within the whole department. There are certain guys that push it, me being one of them. So we just a lot of guys go out and train and bring it back. And just kind of spread it. But it's still kind of up to the captain, depending on, if they're used to certain things. We don't get assigned. I think now guys are going on trucks because they want to do those things. Like one of the reasons why I wanted to do truck was a lot of guys were pushing engine stuff on my department at the time. Really good pump guys. And then maybe like Nozzle 4 started happening, and I was like, we don't really have a guy that wants to push truck. We don't really know how to do that. So, yeah, like I said, I would just travel and train and just met up with a bunch of guys that helped me kind of push this thing.
Okay, that's awesome. With that being said, what if you can remember what trainings did you go to, or and where at?
So that was a big part of my, I guess my career. I always kind of thought that I know you're probably gonna ask about the outside training thing, so I guess I'll kind of bring it into this. So I guess like the first 10 years of my career, I thought I was a pretty decent fireman. I was like,
Right, right.
I worked hard and everything, but I think it's like you don't know what you don't know. Especially being from Hawaii, we're pretty isolated from everybody else. My big thing was like I would transfer to crews or trucks that were really busy, just to get that experience. But I think our skill set wasn't there because we just didn't know any better. So one of these guys, when I got promoted to engineer, he said, "Let's go out, go to a training." So we went to HROC, Kirk Isaacson's. That
Oh.
was my very first conference. You know, I got to meet like Chief Lombardo, Ray McCormack, Dennis Legear, Daryl Liggins. These guys all, you know, rock stars in the fire service, and that kind of that was that nudge that I really needed. And I re kind of realized we went out to dinner. And there was these two guys that decided that they wanted to sit by us and then just started talking story. And these guys maybe had 3 or 4 years on and they're like chiefs of the training department and they just knew so much stuff. And I was like, I don't know nothing. You know, like I thought I was some badass guy and I don't know. I didn't know. I just didn't know.
Right.
From then on, I just started going out to train. I probably try to go out to train twice a year. Probably the biggest ones that guys that changed my career were the guys from like Brothers in Battle. That was the very next class I went to. It was basic irons and advanced irons class. That's where I met Brian Olson, Rob Fisher, Mark Tilden, Cody Treshtrail, and those kind of guys formulated my whole like force of entry stuff. So I got part of the force of entry. Whenever I become part of a cadre too here, like I don't think it's enough. Like, so I always go out and I'll try to like learn more, go to these classes, force of entry. Another class I went to, I went to the Mile High Fire Conference like 3 times, taking classes from ground ladder classes from Irons and Ladders, like Brian Lynch and Ian Bruzniak. Those guys have been really influential for me for ground ladders. What else have I done? Like, so I went to firemanship 3 times. I went to FDTN, took truck
Ooh.
ops one and two. What else did I go? I went to Cal Fire. We did some fire behavior stuff, learned some vertical vent, over live fire. What else did I do? Went to North Carolina Equipment Breeding School. That was a
Oh,
big one.
in Gaston County. Okay.
Scott Hardin, he came down
Yep.
here for, what happened was at P10, they taught us RIT in Hawaii. So we kind of got that bond going. I asked him, "Hey, can you hook me up with this class? You know, I heard this was a badass class." He got me in there. That class was just awesome. So these classes, and then another class and a big mentor of mine is Colin Kelly of the West Coast Offense. And I just, like, when I don't know stuff, I'm not. Like I said about going to the front of the class, you know, sitting in the front of the class, like if I don't know stuff, I'll just reach out to these guys over the social media. And I think social media has really shrunk the fire service. So I'll reach out to these guys and just ask questions. And they're always so so welcoming and they're so wanting to share their stuff. And I would be like calling and texting Colin like every other day, just asking about vertical vent and finally, we had a fool's class down here, and I asked him to do a hands-on for us. Kind of grew that friendship and went up to firemanship, did, you know, what rig to roof class. And so I try to teach the guys down here about, you know, going to the roof and yeah, stuff like that. But I think those are the big ones, like Brothers in Battle, Irons and Ladders, the guys from West Coast Offense. Those guys have been really influential in my career for sure.
No,
Those are the ones that kind of did the truck thing for me.
that's awesome. And I can so relate to that. You know, I was on my department for a good couple of years and I'm like, okay, like I'm decent. I always made sure I knew my role. My captain never had to tell me anything, but until you step outside of those walls and go to a class or attempt something you don't know is when you really, it clicks in like, I'm not as good as I thought I was. Like, and I'm not trying to downplay that to anybody. Like, you may have a strong skill set, but you're not as good as you think you are. And I know when I went to my first fire conference and I started doing taking these hands-on classes, these hot classes, it was like, oh, there's room for improvement. And this is why these conferences exist. So I'm so happy to hear you say that, because that's what I'm trying to promote and let other people know. Like, get outside of your department. You only know what your department knows, and that's fine. But there are other ways and other skills that maybe can benefit or cut down the time of the skill you're trying to perform.
I don't think there's, I mean, unless you're with like a super busy department or like a super progressive department, like maybe like Clackamas or Wichita, where they're like running fires. And like Clackamas, those guys, you know, they bring in like Aaron Peels to do their hose and nozzle stuff, and the West Coast offense is teaching them the rig to roof, and the Brothers in Battle is like these they're all part of that department. So that I can just say they're probably going into it, they probably just know and pushing so much stuff. And like Wichita, they just have some badasses over there too. So it just, unless you're part of those kind of departments, I mean, I think most of us aren't though. So going out is so important. Like I cannot emphasize that enough. And I know people can't do it and they can't afford it, and maybe they have different stages in their life where they have to watch their kids, or maybe they have, you know, they have parents that they have to take care of. But if, you know, there's any chance that you should go, you should just go just to see. And then I swear it will change your life. It'll change your career path for sure.
Absolutely. That's I can attest to that 100%, and I agree with you. You can't go to them all, because there are so many. Every other month you see, hey, this going on, that going on. But if you can set aside some money to go to, maybe try to find the closest place to go to. But I think any outside training, man, is very influential. And yes, I truly believe that it changes your mindset, because I know it did for me. When I sat down and I listened to lectures from chiefs, captains, firefighters, and you could just see the way they talk, the passion that they have, it just started clicking in my head, like, this is how I have to view the job. Like, I always viewed the job as serious, but there's just little things you start thinking about, little shortcuts that you might be like, oh, I mean, if I do this little shortcut, it's not going to hurt, but it could have dire consequences. And that's when it started just hitting me very profoundly.
Yeah, for sure. And the thing was, like, during COVID, I had been already kind of traveling and training. Like I kind of went into a depression because I didn't get to travel and train it during that time. We couldn't travel. I think, you know, one of the downsides though going to training is that you get your eyes wide open. Like you see things different, and there's no way going back. You can't go back from that, and like your expectations are going to be higher of yourself and of other people, and that's a tough thing, you know. If you know your department isn't as pushing as hard as you think that they should be pushing, and maybe you can't train for some reason, go out and train, and just being with those like-minded people, because you know, I would say my organization is not like they're not like super heavy hitters where guys are like just going out. There are a bunch of guys that I hang out here because of they do those kind of things, but a lot of guys don't. And you know, just but going to a conference and being surrounded by those guys, because they all want to be there, they all want to get better, and it's just like it's just different, you know. It's like those are my people, you know, and not being able to do that is tough on me, man. Yeah,
No,
for sure.
I get it. I get it. Like I said, I get it. I wish there are organizations out there. I think the trend is starting to turn, the culture is starting to shift. But you're right, because I would go back, and when I go back, I don't like just start going up to everybody in their face like, you need to go here. But I sit back and I watch, and it's just like, you could just see the guy that when he clocks in, it's like, all right, I'm here. Let's do the bare minimum so I can get this done, and then I can go do what I got to do. And then, like, to me, I just started watching individuals. I'm like, okay, this person fits into this category, this person fits into that category. And then you just kind of just sit there and soak it all in, and you're like, wow, like, complacency is here. It's made a bed in the department, and it's here. And it's not a shot at my department because my department isn't the greatest. I mean, we have some good dudes that are trying to do good things, but we also have some complacent people. Like, I'm going to be very transparent and honest. I mean, I think those people are in every department. But the key thing is, like you said, trying to find those individuals that get your mindset, that get your mind frame. And it's like, okay, we both like to do this, so this is going to be my go-to guy. I'm going to have conversations, and then I'll invite whoever wants to come in and like go out and train and whatever. But if you don't want to do it, that's fine. I'm not going to harp you on it. I'm just going to continue to do my thing, even if that means if you're out in the bay by yourself, at least you are trying to get better 1% every day.
And you hear it all the time from different podcasts or whatever. Like guys will go out to their training and they'll try to bring back training. Like we're doing it wrong, you know. And I absolutely did that. Like I was telling you about going to H Rock, and we were pulling inch and a half with I don't know if it was automatic at the time, and I came back and I told those guys that are running training, hey, we got to switch to 2.5 smooth bore nozzles because of this and this and this and that. And they're like, nah, this, we can't do that or whatever. And sadly enough, a few years later, we had a really bad fire here. People died. And I took that on the chin kind of hard. It was like, I didn't push hard enough, but I think it was just the way I did it, kind of like pointing out stuff that we were doing wrong rather than coming up with solutions. It's, yeah, I think. And another thing too is like, I think they don't like their little brother coming in and telling them what to do, it's, or you, like they say, you can't be a prophet in your own land. It's
That's a
hard, you
fact. That's a
know?
fact. Yes.
But somehow you gotta find that message. And I've been able to push some other things in the department by going to outside training. But I think that first time, like you're so excited and you just want to share it all and like, hey, listen to this or whatever, and it's just hard to try to swallow, initially. Even if they want to get after two, which just they don't want to get told that maybe we're doing it wrong, So, yeah.
No, I get it. It's one of those things. I mean, nobody wants to be told that they're doing something wrong, especially when they've been doing it for so many years. But at some point, it takes a little bit of humility and maturity to just step back, listen to what that person is bringing, their information, the data, the stuff that they've collected, that they've learned, and why not just try it? Because yes, you don't want to be that guy that goes up in the face and say, "Hey, we've been doing this all." Like nobody wants to hear that. But you can bring solutions and we can test it, make sure it works for us, and then even if we don't take all of it, bits and pieces and make it our own. So I totally get it, and I'm sure there's, I mean, I'm going to be honest, the people who listen to these podcasts are the ones who are dialed in. They're trying to better themselves, better their organization, but you're going to have some organizations out there that aren't going to want to hear it. And you just, to me, you just either stick with it because, tough times, they don't last. Tough people do. And, or maybe you will be able to change your mind. Maybe it takes that one person that has some pull or an influence to go, hey, training chief or captain or even chief of the organization, we need to look at this because of such and such. And the fire service is hard-headed. Firemen are a type A personality. If we've been doing things for so long, we don't like change. But with the data and the people that are coming out explaining the why, showing you this is why we need to do it this way, I think where we are, we're changing that trend to the positive.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. Yeah. And thank you for, bring me on and having a platform like this. I think it's super refreshing, being able to listen to your podcast, Danny, and knowing there's guys out there. And yeah, it's just super helpful for me.
It
So.
helped me, and that's I've explained that to others. I'm telling you, man, I was at a point where I was done. I was done with the fire service. I was like, I'm out of here. And I luckily my friend was like shared me a link to a podcast. I listened to it, and everything the guy was saying, I was like, damn, that's me. Yep, it's my department. Yep, I feel just like this. And it's like, keep fighting. Keep fighting the good fight, which put me on the conferences, lectures, hot classes, all these individuals I've been able to talk to, man. Like, this is why I do it. I don't do it for money. I don't make any money. Of course, you don't hear any ads. I want to keep it simple. Like, I just want to talk to firemen to let other firemen know, hey, in your career, you are going to have a point where things are going to get a little rocky, a little rough. But weather that storm, because there are so many other individuals out there who are fighting that same fight like you. And at the end of the day, you can only change what you can change with your department. But the way I look at it, as long as I know I'm doing my job, then that's the best that I could do, is just keep moving forward and keep training.
Well, my wife always tells me, like, you can't expect other people to be like you, and go into all these outside trainings and stuff. But I do expect the guys that were on duty to be on task and do those things that they need to do. I'm not, I yeah, I don't expect the guys to be like listening to podcasts on their day off and training on their day off. And but you know. I do want you to work out. I do want you to train, when you're on duty. It doesn't take much to like read something fire service for an hour when we're on duty. It's like we're getting paid on shift. And we can do our clean up the station, do a drill, have everything done within first 4 hours. And that's all I ask of guys. I mean, just put in a little effort. But you definitely don't have to be like me, but
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. With that being said, this is a couple personal questions, because I'd like to know, what time is shift change, or what time does your shift start in Hawaii?
So we do 24-hour shifts. I start at 8 a.m. and I don't go home till 8 a.m. the next day. So I think they call it like a modified Kelly. I just explaining to guys like we'd work like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then we get 4 days off and come back Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, and it just rotates like that.
Okay, so you have 24 on, 24 off, 3 times in a row, and then you're off of 4.
4 days.
Okay, all right. And what would you say is your busiest station?
Our busiest station is called well, our busiest truck. I say our
Sure.
busiest
Y
truck.
yeah, yeah.
Our busiest truck is Ladder 2 Pua. They run probably, I don't know, probably 10, 15 calls a day, I would say. But it's like mostly medical stuff. I got some stats down here if you want, just for fires wise. I think we run like 64,000 calls like in 2023. And
Okay.
like, where was it? Yeah, 64,000 alarms in 2023. And like 2,600 of those were being a fire, and maybe 1,700 were like structure fires. The truck I'm on is like, I think we ran like 16 fires last year. It's not a lot. And like 10 of those are being like structure fires.
It's more
Yeah, not,
than
we're not, we
that's
do a lot
the
of medical stuff for sure.
Well, so, yeah, a lot of departments are. I mean, unless you're in like Baltimore or some places in DC that see fire a lot, like that's, yeah, it's around the norm. Okay. All right. And if a structural box, a structure fire comes in, what does your department give on the initial dispatch? How many trucks, engines, things like that?
We'll send 4 engines, a ladder, and a battalion chief. Two of that would be a first alarm.
First one.
Second alarm, I think it's 2 engines, another aerial. And then if you go to a third alarm, 2 more engines, another aerial, and then another BC. It just kind of escalates like that.
Okay. Okay. All right. Air packs you guys use?
We use MSA G1.
I'm gonna say G1s. And your turnout gear? Just because I'm curious.
Turnout gear right now, we're in Lion.
Okay.
We're in line currently. We've had what do you call that? Well, we had different types, but right now we've been in line for quite a bit. We're going right to our we're currently doing our changing over. I'm part of the PPE committee, so we just did our wear tests. I think we haven't awarded it yet, but yeah, we're pretty close. We're pretty
Okay.
close to just
Okay.
selecting a guy.
And your engines, do you have crosslays or does everything come off the back?
We have crosslays. Yeah, we are pre-connects. We have crosslays. Yeah, I think I would like everything to come off the back. I'm not an engine guy anymore. I used to be an engine guy, but what I see a lot, I think our department is so heavily into crosslays. I'm not really a fan anymore. It's just because having pre-connected lines and all that. Yeah, I know it's fast, but not they don't always work because of the distance and the stretch and all that kind of thing. I would rather them just to learn to pull everything off the back and have low hose beds and stuff like that. But we don't have low hose beds.
Okay,
So
so your hose heads are still kind of high.
they're pretty high, yeah. But our trucks are really good, I think. They do a really good job of speccing them, but it's just they're not really easy to pull off the back to get up there, yeah.
Okay.
So,
Well, maybe that could be another committee you decide to join later on.
I was part of like the, well, I applied for part of the apparatus committee, but it was I only wanted to, because I'm so heavily into truck. I did like I only wanted to spec like I want to stay in my world. I guess I don't want to be stepping into other things, but because like I travel and train and do a lot of things and read a lot of stuff and listen to stuff like you got, I know quite a bit of a lot of little stuff of everything, I guess. So I have strong opinions about certain things. But I just try to stay in my lane. Like before, I'm a part of a lot of different cadres in our department, but within the last few years, I kind of like just stay with a lot of truck stuff because I think it's hard for guys to see when guys are like all over the place. But if they see one guy and then he's like, he's pushing truck and they, hey, I think this is the way to go, and I think it's a little easier to swallow for guys in the department. So I just try to stay in my lane.
Okay.
So.
What was the allure for truck work? Because I can relate to you, and I'm not saying like I am a truckie, but I was on an engine for 15 of my years. And then when we were opening our newest station, it was going to be a ladder company. It's a Quint, but it's a ladder company. And I was never really a ladder guy. I was like, I don't know. But something was just like, do something that you've never done, get uncomfortable. And so I put in for it and I was assigned to a shift at that newest station. And I've told people before, I took two truck classes once I knew I was going out on that ladder truck. Man, I took a can confidence class where they put you under live fire and have you control the fire with a water can. Opened up my eyes to what the water can really do, how it really can keep fires in check. And then I took a Twisted Truckee class with Kevin Lewis out of Dallas. And the body mechanics of having the single man throw a ladder, doing things with the ladder, doing truck type work, I felt like I thought to myself after one of the evolutions, like, I am gassed. Like, I work out, I shouldn't be this gassed. And I talked to him privately on a break, and he was like, have you always been on a truck? I said, no, I was on an engine for 15 years. He was like, you're using different muscles now. Your body mechanics have to be more adaptable to a ladder work because the ladders were heavy. Like, I think I was throwing a 28 by myself and I was gassed. And he was like, you've never done it before. He's probably like, you probably had a 24, right? And I was like, yes. He's like, you got to work your way up. So my question to you is, what was the allure to get you to the truck side?
I don't know if there was such an allure at first, and like I kind of mentioned it before. There were guys that were pushing engine at the time, and there was nobody pushing truck. It's just something I think I kind of grew to love. It's just I don't like nowadays. I don't like touch hose. I don't like to be attached to it.
Okay.
I love being able to jump into a window and just doing a search or going up on the roof if I have that opportunity. Yeah, I don't like to be tied to something. But yeah, I think it was just the department what we needed at the time, and I wanted to push my department to be better. And I thought that was probably the biggest thing that we needed at the time. We didn't have like truck. We have engines and ladders, but we just don't. We didn't do that, and that drove me to really want to pursue truck work stuff. And yeah, that's history. I just love it now. And just those are the things I want to do. I joke, but when guys see me pulling holes, like I really don't want to do this. Like I don't.
No, I get it. I get it. And so this is going to be a spoiler alert for you, but by the time this episode's out, that other episode will be released. I had a conversation with Sean Duffy, and
Okay.
I asked him his opinion on the Quint, because I'll read articles. Not too long ago, I was on social media where somebody was showing a picture of their Quint that they ordered, and just the comments were like, Quints aren't two trucks, that's blasphemy. And I'm just like, if it works for that geographical area, then it works. Like, we can't, fire departments across this country sometimes cannot afford just having two trucks with no pumps on it. Like, they have to be adaptable. So I asked Sean his opinion on it, and he laid down the gospel on his answer. I won't say anything else when it comes out. You can hear it for sure. But I totally get your sentiments on it. I mean, I still like hose, but does your department allow you to search off the line, or do you have to be tied to a hand line?
We can search off the line. We've kind of made a big push with our search classes recently. There are still guys in our department that are very hesitant to push in without and search off the line though, for sure. I mean, we still have guys that just shoot holes through the window and they won't go interior. That is a thing here. Like regarding the Quint, when I first got on, we had tillers and no hose or very minimal hose. It was just basically for high rise stuff. It wasn't like we had water on the trucks and stuff. But we went to Quint's early on in my career, but we didn't have that Quint concepts. We always had engines with the ladders, so even with Quint's. And that was a thing, like you go to a building fire and you're in a Quint, but you're not still not doing ladder work, even if what you're arriving on. And like just giving like an example, like if our department pulled up and the Quint was we first arrived, they would probably work as an engine, but we never sent another ladder to go and do the truck stuff. It was just like I don't think they it was thought out very well. Yeah, I just think that they got to think about it different. I believe in the Quint concept, like you said. If it works, it works. There's a I suggested there's a part in our on our island where it could work, I think, because they're so isolated from the rest of the department. And I suggested, yeah, you should put a Quint up there, and not have just an engine, so that way they can, or maybe you just stage it, but then they jump on the apparatus that they need at the time because it's so isolated. But they just purchased that. A new engine, and they didn't want to make the change. But I think definitely it could work. Our department is, we have the urban suburban kind of thing, and there's parts of it where you may be waiting, 10, 15 minutes for the next company to come. But I live in where I work in town. I mean, I make a wrong turn somewhere, and they're right up my ass, like that. I'm not gonna be able to recover from that, so it's just,
Got you.
but there are other places they'll be by themselves for a while.
Okay.
So I think the Quint concept could work out there. But Yeah, it's just something that they haven't really done.
And is most of your area hydrogenated?
I mean, I think our water supply is pretty good. It's, not like, unfortunately, like what happened on Maui with the line of fires. Our water supply is really good here for the most part. There's some places like on the North Shore where the pressure isn't the greatest, where I kind of I fought some brush fires out there where it's not the best. But pretty much wherever I've worked, and I've pretty much worked all over the island, it's been pretty good, I'd have to say. And we do have tankers out there too, so it's that does help.
I was gonna ask. All right, so you have tankers. Okay. And what's the temperature year round in Hawaii? Does it ever get like cold?
For us, like if it drops into like the 70s, that's cold. But it probably hovers in the mid-80s most time. It's, humidity, I wouldn't say maybe it's as bad as Florida or like if you go to Japan in the summer, but it's pretty humid. I mean, like, I try to get after it in my turnouts, and some days, just with the humidity and just being in the 80s, you're gonna be you'll be sweating pretty good, for sure. But
I mean,
mid-80s, yeah.
that's not bad. That's not bad at all. Like, do you have a rainy season? I know, like, Seattle gets that rainy period. Does Hawaii have that?
I mean, yeah, but it's I wouldn't complain about our weather at all. I mean, it definitely in the winter months we do it does rain more often than it does in the summertime for sure. But I mean, I live in California, and that's not even that bad. But it's, it gets cold. You have to put on a jacket, a light jacket, or whatever. But it's not. I would never complain about our weather one bit. No.
All right. Gotcha. And as far as your workouts, I'm assuming the people that you follow, it probably started to translate, like, I need to get in my gear more, because I could tell you I started working out, but I never did gear workouts. And I was just like, when I saw it, the concept was, working out in gear, like, I don't know about it. But now it has definitely tremendous benefits, because I think now when I put it on, it's like nothing. It's like putting on a coat. And I know my mobility will be a little bit different than if I was slick in my regular clothing, but now it's really not a factor anymore. I am so used to it. So what got you into, training in gear and working out in your gear?
Well, I would say, like, typically when I entered the fire service, they're gonna pay me to work out. I work out. It's just something that I do. Like I'll do some kind of cardio and I'll lift some kind of weights. That was predominantly, that early half of my career. I would do that. I would say maybe there's a handful of times that I never worked out. I mean, if you're gonna pay me to be there and to work out, I'm gonna work out. There's a guy I follow, where he used to be on social media, like Brian Olsen. He got into like starting strength, so I started doing starting strength too. I got relatively pretty strong, pretty fast. I mean, that program is pretty legit. And then I see him starting to work in turnouts, and then I see more and more guys starting to work in turnouts. And there's a goal that I have currently, that's requiring me to be in turnouts quite a bit. So I've done that. Probably it's probably going on 2 years now. I get in my gear just like how you are, Danny. And for sure, there's a huge difference. If you ever like if you did like a long like FGS class or RIT class and you're in your gear all day, or you happen to have your pack on for long periods of time, like your shoulders get all sore. That tends not to happen to me anymore because I'm just in my gear so much. I wouldn't say it's good, but I can definitely tell like when I'm exercising in PT gear compared to like in my turnouts, PT gear I can go like long, like it just like there's no restriction at that point, and it just like even if I'm in just turnout gears and I take off my mask or I'm not wearing my SCBA, I mean that's like there's so much mobility, so much, and I just have that so much more freedom, and it's like, wow, I can go for a long, long time, you know. But now you just put more and more stuff on yourself, you know, your mask and your SCBA, and you're like, yeah, this is work. It always seems to be work to me. I always complain to my wife. She was like, how was your work? I was like, oh, I got my ass kicked today. And it just, but that's just what I do now. Just I get kind of used to it. Like, if I'm not doing that, I just kind of feel I didn't work out today. Yeah. So it's just the thing I do now.
And you and I both know, and you're older than I am, but I can tell, like, the fire service is a young man and women's game. And as you get older, I used to make fun of my dad. I remember I was telling my wife this a couple of days ago. I remember my dad would like bend down with his knees, and then he'd stand up, and like I'd hear his knees like make these snap, crackle, pop noises. And I used to be like, oh my God, it's terrible. And he's like, wait till you get older. And now my knees are doing the same thing. So it's one of those things. I think as you progress in age, you have to remember that this the fire service, the fire ground, just the whole fire department in general, it benefits you to be in good health and good shape. So what's your advice that you would let others out there know to take?
I would say it's better to stay in shape than try to get into shape. This always just try to do something. But for the fire service wise, like I really would want guys to get in gear more often. It's just, and I understand about the PFAS and all that stuff, but I think it's going to benefit the department as a whole. More just being in your gear, being comfortable in your gear, and it's not just that, you know, the acclimation and the being able to breathe the bottle longer. It's more than that. It's just being comfortable in your stuff. Like for me, being with the mask with the gloves on is a big thing for me. And like I took like 2 years every shift, 10, you know, 10 times every shift for 2 years. To do that, it wasn't easy for me. And then now I can do it. But now, because I, you know, putting on my gear and stuff like that, I know exactly, like, oh, I get hung up on this or something's wrong with my back because I do it so often. And so I think you gotta get used to being uncomfortable. And like, I didn't like working on gear too. Like, I tried it years ago, and it sucked.
Yeah, I mean, literally, yeah, it sucks.
It sucks. I mean, I can't say like it'll ever be good, but it's just something that, you know, that you have to be comfortable doing. I don't know what else to say about that. It's just you got to be comfortable in your gear. You can't be fumble fucking around, you know. It's just like I see guys come off the truck and like their SB waist strap isn't on, or they're fumbling around with the helmet, and it's just because they haven't put on their stuff. And then if I have to do it every single day by just putting on my turnouts, I mean, you're going to be that much better. And I promise you will be. You just be comfortable being uncomfortable. And it doesn't have to be really anything extreme. You don't have to work out like, say, as long as I do, but it just get comfortable. Just, you know, do a few jumping jacks and push-ups or something, and just be in your gear, sweat a little bit.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like I tell people, 30 minutes at least, because to me, that's the 25 to 30 minutes is about the equivalent that you should be able to work with an SCBA bottle, depending on where you're at health wise. 20 to 30 minutes. 30 minutes. So if you can do 30 minutes in your gear, like, great, then shed it. Or what I like to do is keep that heat trap in and maybe just sit in it for like 5 minutes. That way you get used to it. So when you get done doing whatever, you're not that person that's coming outside and they're ripping everything out like very dramatically and taking everything off. And it's like, bro, act like you've been here before. So yes, I get it. 20, 30 minutes a day. It did suck. When I first tried it, I was like, why am I doing this? But there's a benefit to it because you learn where your threshold is, or you think, because you can go longer. It's all mental. It's all mental. When your body says, hey, I'm tired, I'm hot, and then you get that notion, okay, I want to stop. No, at what I liked, what I did was when I got to that point, it was like, all right, do one more round. And then if when I got done, all right, just see if you could do another round. You know, but baby steps. I tell people baby steps. You can't go from 0 to 100. You
No.
can't scroll through Instagram and see a Eric Vidal or a Marcos Orozco clip and be like, I'm doing this from day one. That ain't gonna happen.
No.
You're gonna be on the ground, just like, yeah, out of it. You have to work your way up, which is what I did. And now it's like, yeah, the workout, how was it? It sucked. But at the end, it's like, I feel good because I did it. It was accomplished. And now I can start my day. And I don't do gear workouts every day. I probably do a gear workout 2 to 3 days a week. And then, you know, I do some slick workouts. It's getting cooler now. So, like this morning, I did a slick workout, just wore, you know, regular PT clothes and stuff. But yesterday, around 4 o'clock, I did a quick gear workout, quick 30 minutes, nothing crazy. And the whole PFAS thing, I think that's everyone's entitled to their own opinions and views, but I listened to a certified PhD doctor who pretty much was like, PFAS is not just in gear, it's in water, it's in certain foods. Like, you have already been exposed to PFAS, whether you know it or not. What we can do now for future generations, you know, we can look at the turnout gear that's PFAS free, but at the end of the day, for me, my personal belief and opinion, I am not going to let that stop me from getting in my gear. Like, that's crazy. I mean, because I've already been in it. I've been in this fire service for career-wise 18 years. So whatever PFAS I have, I'm sure it's been absorbed in my body already. So it's like, we can't use not getting in our gear as an excuse, because you can't tell that to the homeowner when their house is on fire. Like, you can't show up and go, listen, this gear we got, man, we just found out it got something called PFAS in it. Like, I'm so, like, you can't do that. You either you're in or you're out. And if you're out, go find something else, you know. And hopefully departments out there aren't, I mean, I know there was a push of maybe we should limit firefighters in their gear. Like, no, that's all that's going to do is make your liability worse when they do have to get into it and they're not acclimated to that heat, especially if you live in regions that get hot. Like, there's no substitute. You have to get in it. Like, you just have to. It is what it is. It's the job.
Yeah, for sure. Just being in gear. I was listening to this Alexis Raptis. She's like a CrossFit competitor, and she said you gotta just have like a number in mind for whatever, like say you're doing up downs or whatever, and just do 10 and or do 5 more. And if you quit every time it gets hard, and I think that's a big thing for being in turnouts for me. It's just like learning to go past certain limitations that I thought I was at, and just do 5 more, just do 5 more. Nah, you can do do 5 more, and then basically by that time, like you're done with your workout. But it's just being able to push yourself and just seeing how far you can go, and you just never know in our job like where you might have to push to that limit. But at least you know where that is now. And for me, like for just working out wise, I'm older. I just work out because, I don't want to let that, I don't want to be that guy trailing behind because I'm the old guy or I'm promoted. I want to be able to keep up with the young guy. I will never be that guy who sits on the couch and just does nothing. I will be there with you in the end. Like I'll be pushing you down that hallway. You know what I mean? Like I'll be right there. You don't have to worry about me. If anything, I'll be leading you. So it's just like, let's just go, This is what that job is.
Absolutely. No, this is what this job is. Like, nobody wants to get to that point, but there is going to be a time where you're at work and that dispatch is going to come in and that call is going to be one you thought would never come in. And it's like, oh, it's game time. Yeah. And that time is not the moment to be like, well, can I do this? You know? And I think if more people thought with that mentality, I think crews and the fire service in general would be a whole lot better, because, you know, we all have said at some point, like, oh, that can never happen here because of X, Y, and Z, but we don't know. And I don't want to find out when that call is dropped. I want to know, like, all right, we got this call. Like, it's game time. Let's go. Let's do it.
Like Robin Rivers says, like things that don't happen happen all the time. Like it's just like
Yep.
It just, you got to think of like it's going to happen, and so you'll be ready for it when it does.
Definitely. Definitely. Are you guys allowed to have leathers, or what kind of helmets do you wear?
No, yeah, we don't have leathers. It's like a composite.
Okay.
I don't know if I should really be saying this, but it's just like we have a hard time when guys like buy leather chin straps because they, help us to mask up a little better.
Yes, they do. Yes.
So we get in trouble for that. I'm one of those guys. Anything that's going to give me an edge
Yep.
to get in that building faster, I will do.
Yep. I'm
The
with you.
department is not on board with that all the time, though,
Hey,
but
I'm with you. Me and you in the same boat. We're in the same boat.
So.
Yeah, it's 'cause it's funny. I'm gonna say it because he listens to it. So if he sees me, he'll whatever, he'll talk to me later. But my training captain, or I'm sorry, my training chief listens to my podcast. So not too long ago, he went around just basic like company. He just wanted to see how fast we can get in our turnouts and mask up, be on air, which is fine. Like that's a standard skill. So I'm always up for it. And he mentioned that he was like, I went around and I noticed like a few of you guys have your masks preset. And I'm like, I am one of them. Like, and this is why. If we truly care about the citizens, time is the essence. From Ben Schultz to all the people that I've listened to, time is what makes or breaks us on the, in the fire service. We are already the behind the eight ball when dispatch comes in because that call and that fire has been going on before, who knows how long before somebody's seen it. So I was shown the whole have your mask preset. And when I saw it, I'm like, what does that mean? And one of the Clark, I think it was Cody. Yeah, Cody Clark. He showed me, he's like, look at my mask. And he had this mask taped and he only had one where you just had to pull it. And I was like, I like it. So I had to get used to it, just like he introduced me to doing everything with gloves on and the hood, like it's baby steps, but everything I do is for a reason. And if me having my mask preset is a violation to like OSHA or whatever the case may be, if something, God forbid, were to happen to me and they're like, well, he had his mask preset, we're not going to give him benefits. Joke's on you. Me and my wife have life insurance, so she's gonna be okay. Like, I'm not worried about it. Like, there's so many other things we should be worried about than, oh, his master's preset. Or I seen it's very popular up north. The a lot of northern departments, the DMV area, their hoods are kind of interlaced in their jackets, so they're always just kind of hanging behind their jacket. Like, if that's how they want to do it, I don't see why these things are a big deal. Now, when you modify your turnouts in any way, I get it. Like, I mean, super modify, but if you do little things to help you with time, that should like, why are we concerned on this? It's just
Definitely.
it's just one of those things. Like, I tried. Like, I get it. A chief standpoint, chief has rules they have to follow, but it's like, are we really harping on individuals that are doing this for time? Like, it's there's a reason, but anywho, we won't go down that soapbox. But I get it with your chin strap because I was shown, hey man, you need to get a longer one because I always just had the standard. And when I saw the longer one, I'm like, oh, yeah, sold. And I bought like three the next day. Like, it was like, we're gonna change all my helmets to this. It works, it's for time. But, anywho.
Yeah, it's like always if I was a like if I was a BC and I came around and I see a guy with like a leather chin strap, I would just say, why you do that? And if it's for time, okay, well, show me how fast you can mask up. And it's like, if you can show me that you can mask up in like 10 seconds, I'm like, bro, keep the chin strap. Like, I'm good with that. But if you're just doing it to show off or whatever, then that no. But if you're doing it because you, for the unprotected civilian, bro, all the power to you, and I'm going to support you as much as possible. That's would be me. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm with you 100%. 100% on that. And I know he'll probably come talk to me after he listens to this. So. But it's fine, Chief. You know me already. We already had discussions, Chief. So I'm not too worried about it. But let me see here. We've been on a little hour. This has been great, man. Really appreciate you talking. Because I like I said, I've never had somebody from Hawaii, so this is like awesome. I love talking to you.
Not for sure.
Where would you like to see yourself retire, and how much longer do you have?
So I have 23 years on. I can retire in two.
So yeah, I'll do 25.
Yeah. But I'm probably gonna go longer than that. I have like a number of like 27, 28 in my head. Part of it is my son wants to get in.
Oh,
He is an
nice.
ER nurse. He's an ER nurse. But since he's been a kid, you know, he's been nothing but want to be a fireman. But he went into nursing, and he has to, because of the hospital he works at, he has to put in a year so before he has to pay back that training. And then that way he wants to do both. He wants to be working an ER nurse and do fire. So I'm kind of waiting for that. I would love to go and run fires with him and be in when he's in. Position I'm going to be at, I'm going to say a driver. I kind of made that decision not too long ago. I always thought that I would be a captain one day. But I never really liked doing it as being in that acting role. So I didn't take the first two tests that I qualified to take captain. And then the next thing I test I took, I didn't pack mess it like one question or something like that. I think it's probably because I wasn't studying previously. I was so focused on like trying to change the department through the truck stuff and doing all those outside trainings and focusing on skill set, and I wasn't into the book stuff anymore. But I'm just driving and doing that is something that I love doing. And I know like Chief Courtney Moore from the Weekly Scrap, he has that question like, what is the most important position or whatever,
Right,
and it's just
right,
and it's a company officer.
right.
I think for me, I think the answer is like it's the position that you're in right now. Like you can be influential no matter where you're at. And I think being in my position, I think I've had a huge impact on the department. At least I hope so. I brought back training, I'm part of cadres, I've changed apparatus spec, changed PPE spec. Guys, I think they respect me because of what I do and how I carry myself. And I think that's going to be my legacy. I think, you want to try to, I always wanted to do, leave the fire service better than I found it. I think I've done that. And I think also there's got to be a guy like in the field, there's got to be a driver out there that's going to be pushing these things also. I think guys have wanted me to go to training to do certain stuff to push it there, but I think there's also got to be guys in the field to do that stuff too. And I love going to work. I think me being a captain, I think that would kind of take it away from me a little bit. And so I kind of told myself that I wouldn't. My wife put us in an awesome financial position. She's done well with our finances, and I love her to death. She's everything to me, but she put us in a good spot, and I'm able to make that decision. We're not having to promote to captain, so I'm probably gonna end it there.
That is, I love hearing your answer because my personal opinion, yes, you hear that company officer, company officer, company officer. I think it's up to the individual. I don't like whenever we have people that are, I don't want to say forced, but maybe coerced into taking the company officer role. And then when they get it and you see them a couple months later or a year later, like, how do you like it? And they hate it. Like, I know guys that are like, I don't like it. I wish I could go back. I wish I never did it. So I am a firm believer on you should go as high as you want to go. And if you test it out and you don't like it, I've known a couple guys too I've spoke to since doing this that have demoted themselves, have gone to the chief and go, listen, chief, I'd like to go back to this position. Like, are you sure? Like, you're taking a demotion. Yes, I am. And they are happy with it. I understand we're in a day and age now where, some areas are just hiring. If you're breathing, you're hired. And then these, we're promoting some of these individuals who really aren't into the job that we would like. And so they are taking these company officer roles and not really doing anything with it. They're just there for the status, the bugles, if you have bugles and whatnot. But I truly believe, I think it's worse if we push people that love or have a passion at a certain position, and then we push them into something that they don't want to do, and now they're just forced to do it because they're there. I think that speaks volumes when you have an individual that's openly willing to talk about that. And I think that not everybody is made for every single role, you know what I mean, within the fire service. You have some people
For sure.
who are certified great backsteppers, and if they want to stay there, that's cool. Certified great drivers, awesome. Company officers, cool. Battalion chiefs, yes. But and I understand because Corley talked about it too. He called it death from a thousand cuts. The ones who are getting promoted to these chief positions that don't really have the best interests at heart for the organization, but they took it because they're the only ones that took it, and the ones that should take it don't want to because they don't want to leave the truck. I get it. Like there is both sides, but I firmly love how you mentioned how like that's not you stay in your lane. That's not your role. That's not what you want to do. And I get that because me personally, I think the best position in the fire service is the driver operator. That's just me. Some people say company officer. I say driver operator. Driver operator sets the tone from get go. If you're on the engine, he needs to, whether you're on the engine, ladder or rescue, you got to know your route. If you're an engine operator, you got to make sure you get water. If you're on a quint or a ladder, you got to make sure you have water too, but you got to be able to set up your rig. It's more than just holding a steering wheel. Like anybody can be a steering wheel holder, but it takes a lot more for a person to be a true driver.
For sure. Yeah, that's for sure. And it's, let's just speak about rank a little bit. Like, I respect rank. I do, but like, there's not everyone in rank that I respect. It's just because they went the way they went about it or whatever. I think we're whatever position you are, you gotta push it though. Like, you gotta you can be the best that you can be in that position, for sure. Just don't sit back on your laurels, though. Just always try to be better. Always try to do something for your department, for yourself. Just make those around you better. Want things like I do the cadre stuff. I, try to influence the department that way. But I also thought because we weren't pushing the department enough, I became like the Fire Nuggets affiliate for Hawaii. And it was. I try to impact the department that way too. Like, guys who can't go to afford to go to training and stuff, I try to bring training here. So it's not just like try to do everything that you can, I think, to better yourself and better guys around you. And maybe it is not always being ranked, but yeah, doing those things, I think that's find your way. And there's multiple ways of doing things. So
Definitely,
yeah.
100%, man, 100%. Ken, I really appreciate it, man. I know it's early out your way a little bit, but you're probably I don't see you as a person that stays in bed late. So I see you as an early riser, but there is a 5 hour difference, in our time zone. But I really appreciate you accepting the invite. Took a little nudge of getting you to like, yeah, really? And it's like, yeah, no, we should talk, but I really thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I'm sure others that know you or know you through social media are going to love the message that you're promoting. Keep doing what you're doing. I love seeing your videos. And yeah, no, I really appreciate you coming on, man, and talking shop, spreading the gospel.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Danny. I mean, yeah, just put keep pushing out great content. I mean, it's I love it. I mean, I love just hearing it. It's refreshing to me. Again, it's like a recharge for me when I get to hear other guys, like myself, wanting to change the fire department for the better. Yeah, it means a lot to me, Danny, that you do what you do. So please continue to do what you do. Yeah.
I will go as long as people say yes. Until I run out of people to interview, then I'll stop. But till then, I'm gonna enjoy this ride, and I really appreciate these friendships and relationships that I've been able to have and form. And you know, emails I get, instant messages I get telling me keep going, handwritten letters I get in the mail, like it's awesome. The fire service truly is great, and I will continue to push out episodes as long as people will listen and say yes. So thank you, Ken. Really do appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Danny. Thanks.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.